Welcome to Orphans No More, a radio extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry, a program dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, advocating Christian families to adopt and get involved with foster care here in the Capital District, as well as globally, and encouraging and supporting those who've heard and heeded the call of James 1:27.
Jesus said, "Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." That is John 8:32. I'm your host, Sandra Flack. Welcome to Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry. Our guest today is Adrian Lewis, Executive Director of the Care Portal, a platform of the Global Orphan Project. Welcome, Adrian.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. We were just chatting about how it's a little bit chilly here in New York and where you are there in
Kansas City.
Kansas City. We're both a little bit chilly this morning, but we'll...
Colder than I wish, but we don't get to control that, do we?
That we don't. We don't. But we're going to have a great conversation here today. And I want to just start a little bit with your story. Adrian, you and your wife, Cynthia, have three biological kids, and you had a successful career, first in managing health clubs, I understand, and then selling pharmaceuticals and leading a software company. You were, boy, a jack of all trades. But you gave all of that up for full-time ministry to orphans and foster children. So what led to that drastic change?
Sandra, the short answer is the Lord did.
Yeah.
He tends to give us direction when he wants us to do stuff. And sometimes we listen and sometimes we don't. I'm a little thick-headed, so it took me a while.
Join the club, right?
I never had any aspirations of being in ministry. Wasn't on my radar, wasn't my plan. God, through a friend at church, and gave me the opportunity to go to Haiti on a mission trip in 2007, and my wife and I went. And while we were there, there's no better way to say it, I just had a run-in with the Holy One. I just bumped into God. My wife and I on a field one day, we literally experienced his presence, and it was one of those moments that reset the course of our life. And so on the heels of that trip, we came back, and my wife quit her job and became a stay-at-home mom, and we felt led to dig into the Global Orphan Project as a ministry, and so we did, and we served, and we went, and we gave, and it just became part of our life. We were engrafted into this ministry of caring for orphans around the world. And then a few years later, I got a tap on the shoulder from the leaders there, and they asked me to leave my company and join the ministry. It was growing. They needed some help. And the truth is, I really resisted. I actually told myself that if this was God's will, I would do it, and he just needed to show me. And some time went by. I consulted with some people. I got some feedback. I prayed. And one day, sitting with my accountant, looking at what we had and what we didn't have and what we were going to give away and so on, I just became overwhelmed with a conviction. I was comfortable. And my comfort was trapping me, and it was making me unable to see how clear it was that this was God's hand. And so when I got that conviction, I knew right away I was supposed to go. And so I did. And next month, I left my company. I joined the ministry. And since January of 2010, I have been living a crazy God-sized adventure of a life.
God is really good about calling us out of our comfort zones, isn't he?
If we would just listen, man, it's there. Because the lie is that comfort is better. And it's just a lie. It's not better. It's sticky, but it's not better.
Yeah. I have found there's like no greater place to be than in the center of God's will. And
that's right.
We usually have to leave our comfort zone first to get there. So let's talk about the Global Orphan Project, or the GO Project. It cares for both orphans both internationally and domestically here in the U.S. So, Adrian, tell us more about the work of the GO Project.
Sure. It's a pretty amazing story. And this man, Mike, and his wife, Beth Fox, they got tapped on the shoulder to help some orphans in Thailand. And so they did. He had a successful business and could say yes to that kind of thing. Then he got invited to go and see. And God broke his heart while he was there, loving on these children that were being cared for by a local church. And so through that process, he began to tell everyone he could about this opportunity, about these children who are at the end of the line and yet super close to God's heart. Mm-hmm. And through the process of telling his friends and family, he developed a little ministry, and that turned into a bigger ministry. And the next thing you know, there were thousands of orphans being cared for through local churches around the world through the Global Orphan Project, facilitating a connection by bringing resources and accountability and process so that in these third world countries, they could actually care for more children more effectively. And that's the basis of the ministry. Local kids in crisis, mostly orphaned, certainly vulnerable. And how do we help local churches where they are care for those kids? So that's what we've been doing since 2004 when the ministry started. And I just got blessed to get to become part of that story. The ministry has also grown in its understanding of orphans become orphans, sometimes because of sin, sometimes because of abuse, sometimes because of those things that we think about. Often it's a poverty issue. Often if there's a mom who can't care for all her kids and there seems to be a better way, and she goes through the hard, I can't even imagine, Sandra, what it would be like to consider it'd be better for one of my kids to not be with me. I can't even imagine. But moms do imagine that. They have to. They're living that all over the world. And so as we learned that poverty was one of the main factors, we try to figure out, well, how do we create some marketplace opportunities so we can create jobs? And then those jobs could provide for those families, provide dignity and resources so their kids didn't have to be cared for by the church in such a dramatic way. They could stay with their mom. And so the net of all of that is the Global Orphan Project's mission is to break the orphan cycle through the power of community and commerce and the love of Jesus. And so we set up ministry and marketplace opportunities all around the world to do just that.
And what countries are you doing that in?
It's a great question. So currently we're in Haiti, Dominican Republic, Malawi, Uganda. You got India, the Philippines, Lebanon. I know I'm forgetting some. There's a whole bunch.
Yeah.
Over the course of time, there's been 20 countries or so. Right now, there's about 10 that we're active in.
And you're really connecting with local churches in those countries and empowering them to help the orphan.
Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing wrong with Americans or whomever going to another country and setting up shop and helping to care for people firsthand. There's nothing wrong with that. But our call, what God has asked us to do, is to facilitate the local church being the point of care. That's what he's asked us to do. And so we know that there's really an amazing infrastructure that God's created, because in every local context, the people that are there who know the love of Jesus also are really well equipped to care for the kids in that context. And so if we can help remove barriers and increase capacity and be catalytic for them to do more of that and do it more effectively, then in our calling, that's the most effective thing we can do.
Yeah.
So that's what we focused on.
And I believe that's best practice anyway. So in 2010, while in Uganda, the Lord spoke to you about foster care. Share with us about that.
He did. I don't want to just throw this around loosely. I know people have different theology and expectations of what God does and doesn't do, but there have been a few times in my life where I am not confused at all, that God has given me a specific assignment, and he's done so at a point in time. And while I was in Uganda in August of 2010, spending time with some pastors and our partners there, I just heard from the Lord to take the foster care class. It was a very clear sentence. It was very specific what I was supposed to do. I texted my wife and said, honey, I think we're supposed to take the foster care class. And a few days later, or next week, when I got back home, we talked about it, and our obedience was a bit delayed because we weren't fully on board with what the heck that meant. We didn't even know we didn't know the scope of foster care at all. But when God tapped us back on the shoulder together, we took the step forward. We got into the class, and I have to tell you, in the middle of that class is when God actually broke my heart for the orphan. I know that sounds crazy because I'd given up my career for working for an orphan care ministry years before, before this, and I'm just now being pierced, because before that time I was pierced for people's lives to be transformed like mine was. That's what drove me. But on that day, in that second class, God broke my heart for the kid down the street. Mm-hmm. And when I heard their stories of how they end up in the circumstances they're in, I just broke. And interestingly enough, I went to the office the very next day, and we have our normal time with the leadership. And Joe Kinetic, who's our CEO, came in and said, "Hey, there are some changes coming in our ministry, and here's what happened. The Lord tapped Mike Fox on a flight back from the Philippines, and his tapping was, stop flying over the kids in the U.S. Mm. It wasn't that what we had been doing was wrong by helping kids all over the world. It was just that now it was time to also help kids in our own backyard through the churches in our own backyard." And when Joe shared that with me, I just lost it. Mm. I mean, I came undone, Sandra, because it was clearly the Lord's hand working on my life personally, but then also developing our ministry into the next season of where we're supposed to go. Mm. And so it just became very obvious that we were to take this step, and my role began to shift, and I began to lead that effort as I walked through it personally. And from that point forward, the Global Orphan Project was really becoming global, not just international, right? Mm. We were also thinking about and working towards caring for kids here in the United States.
Yeah, because it makes you think that, you know, when we think of the word orphan, we think overseas, international, and rightly so, but we don't turn around and look back home and realize that there are 400,000 American orphans, kids in the United States in foster care, and over 100,000 of them are available for adoption. So how can we go to another country and say, here, let us help you fix your orphan problem, when we're not paying any attention to the crisis in our own backyard? So I appreciate that Mike Fox heard that message and got that conviction. And that is a direction that the GO Project began to go. And for you and Cynthia, you did become foster parents, and that led to adoption.
It did. And I got to tell you, it's messy.
Yeah.
So if I can pause this for a quick second. Sometimes the resistance to helping children in our own backyard is that it is too close to home.
Mm.
It actually invades our space.
Yeah.
And it changes how we live when we take on the pain and the brokenness of someone in our own community. It's actually a bit easier to do it internationally, frankly,
yeah,
because I can then just go home.
Right.
Right. And I can advocate, but it's different when God's asking us to love on the person down the road or bring them into our house. And so, you know, Cynthia and I experienced this pain firsthand. I mean, we took in the first two boys in May of 2012, and day one, we were expecting to adopt them. That was the parental rights were terminated. There was nobody else. All relatives had been ruled out, and we were it. And 7 months later, they went to be with a relative who became an option, who wasn't an option before.
Mm.
And I have to tell you, Sandra, that broke my heart.
Yeah.
I mean, it was hard to deal with that loss. It would be no different than, you know, you fly to somewhere in Africa or wherever, and you pick up a child that you've been looking at their picture for a year, and now you finalize this adoption, you bring them home, and then 7 months later, somebody says, "Hey, we made a mistake. There's a better place for them." It's crushing.
Mm. Yeah.
But it is good, Sandra. It's crushing. I don't wish that on anyone except that God changed me in that process. And my heart for the fatherless grew, and my trust in my father grew. And so I wouldn't change it if I could, but I didn't like it.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. I didn't like it. I just know it's God's ways are not our ways, and his thoughts are higher than our thoughts. And so he does ask us to do these messy, hard things without a guaranteed outcome, except he will be there.
Mm.
He will be there.
Yeah.
And he will do what he does. And if I can hold on to that more than anything I can see or touch, man, I want that for as many people on this planet as possible.
Yeah. So let me just remind our listeners, this is Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry. To learn more about adoption, foster care, and orphan ministry, visit our website at justicefororphansny.org. Our guest today is Adrienne Lewis, Executive Director of the CARE Portal, a platform of the Global Orphan Project. We've been talking about the Global Orphan Project, Adrienne, and you've kind of shown us now that how it has gone from not just an international direction, but a domestic, focusing on foster care here in the United States. So let's begin to talk specifically about the CARE Portal. How did that begin?
Oh, great question, Sandra. So when we started doing domestic work, we banged our head against the wall a ton because the only thing we were asking churches to do was to adopt kids who were ready for adoption. Those 100,000 kids that you were talking about, our ask of the church was, hey, pastor, will you stand in front of your congregation and tell people in this city there are 772 kids that need to be adopted? Mm. And the reality is that was a huge ask. And we got met with all kinds of resistance. People just weren't ready for that message. And so over the course of a year and a half or so, we kept on banging our head against the same barrier. And in the same time, we developed relationships with people around the country who were trying to do similar work. And one of those was Bishop Aaron Blake in Texas, who had developed a phenomenal relationship with the child welfare department there. And in that process of us meeting and partnering and dreaming, we began to understand the system better and the breadth of the opportunity, and that it wasn't really just adoption or foster care, but it was helping the church be unlocked for kids from prevention through permanency. It was all of that. And so as that became clear, then we also started to think, well, man, if the church just knew there was something for everybody, could this change? Is there a way forward? Is there a way to deal with the separation between church and state that our country has gotten so entangled in, unfortunately? Mm. And literally one day I'm sitting in my office and I'm reading a document that our CEO wrote about the problem and about where things are. And another moment with the Lord, not words, but a clear vision happened. He just gave me a vision for how to use technology to bust through these walls, to create this very real-time connection between these kids who are in crisis that child welfare knows about, in local churches and those communities who are unaware but could respond. And that moment in December of 2013, we became impregnated with this vision. And one of the things I love about the Global Orphan Project is when someone gets something clearly from the Lord, we are bullish. We don't hold back. We go trying to be obedient. And so we did. And those steps forward led us to engaging the CPS, Child Welfare in Texas, and engaging Bishop Blake and talking through what would it take to actually partner on this level. And if we built this, would they use it? And what would it look like? And so that was the process. We just went for it. And over the course of 2014, we literally built this platform that could be used anywhere in our country, but started being used in Austin in 2014.
So how does the CARE Portal work?
Yeah, it's at its simplest form.
Yeah, simple terms.
In its simplest terms, it's kind of like Uber for child welfare.
Oh.
I mean, you have a child welfare worker who knows of a child in crisis. Let's just say it's a mom who's trying to get her kids back. She's done everything she's supposed to do. Things are going well, and now she's ready to get her kids back. But she needs some things in order to get her kids back. She needs to get beds for them, and she doesn't have no way to do that. And so a child welfare worker can say, go to our website, careportal.org. They can put a request in to say, I have this mom with two kids. She needs to get them back. All that's in the way now is getting her home ready. Can somebody help? When the worker puts that request into our website, It immediately goes to all the churches who have opted into our network that are in that geographical radius around where that particular child is. And they immediately get this request in real time. And so now they have the opportunity to share that with people in their church and their circles, and somebody can literally raise their hand by clicking a button and responding to that simple need that they never knew about, right? So now, because of this technology, in the same community, you've got a child in crisis and someone in a church who wants to help and has what that child needs, and now they're fully connected because the technology revealed them to each other. Just like Uber connects a rider and a driver,
wow,
right? It's that same simple concept. And at its core, that's what it is.
Wow. And there's a great video on the careportal.org website that kind of, it's like a cartoon video that really kind of explains all of that in a very visual way. And our listeners should check that out. How many states is the Care Portal operating in currently?
So because of the Lord's favor, I believe when God is in something, magical things happen.
Yeah.
Right? Not always how we expect. And this is one not how we expected. I mean, we're just 2.5 years into this, and Care Portal's currently in 13 different states and right around 100 different counties. So far, through the platform and the partners who implement it in their local geography, there have been over 18,000 kids served in just a couple of years. And a lot of those kids are being reunited with family. A lot of those kids are being prevented from coming into foster care. It's been an amazing, God thing,
yeah,
from the start. And I look at that and I say, wow, God.
Yeah.
I also say, well, God, you know, there are 3,000 more counties in this country.
Yeah.
And in every county, there are kids in crisis,
yeah,
right? Every single one. And in every county, there are churches who could help.
Yeah.
And we see this amazing opportunity when the right ingredients are in place to have every county in this country have the ability to break down these walls between church and state and fully activate the church to care for these kids.
Yeah. Well, it's the Care Portal's in 13 states, but it is not yet in New York State, and that's my home base, and I would love to see the Care Portal operating here. I know that there are churches here that would embrace that and step up. What does it take to expand the Care Portal into a state?
So we've learned some things over the last couple of years about what it really does take, and we've tried it many different ways, and it boils down to a couple key ingredients at this point. It boils down to feet, favor, and funding. From a feet perspective, there needs to be someone in a local community or some organization in a local community that has relationships with churches, that's in this space of foster care and transition and prevention of caring for these kids locally. Somebody or some organization that is pierced for this calling has to be there and says, hey, we want to lead this effort, right? We want to build a network of churches or tap into our existing network of churches that are trying to do this work. And we want to do the on-the-ground relational development necessary, because the technology is fantastic, but it's nothing without people in relationship.
Right.
It absolutely has to start there. So we call feet the people. We call favor two things: key churches that are willing to lead, and favor with child welfare agencies that are willing to partner. Because we don't, this is not Craigslist where you just throw stuff out there and anybody participates. No, it's way more specific than that. It's you have relationships with child welfare agencies who say, we're going to partner, we're going to implement, we're going to train our staff, we're going to follow the process. And that has to be developed, so that's favor. And then churches need to say, you know what, we're not only going to participate, but we're going to bring in our sister churches, our network of churches. We're going to use our influence to explain this opportunity to others in the community, because it's not a one-church thing. It's a many-church thing.
Mm.
It's a cross-denominational thing. We have seen amazing ecumenical activity happen when the child in crisis in our neighborhood is the focal point and not the individual sign on our building. And it's amazing what happens when you put that child where it belongs and you put the other stuff where it belongs. It's awesome. I'll say one more thing about the favor part. People would assume that child welfare would be hesitant to partner with the faith community. And the reality is, it has not been our experience at all. The state agencies, the private agencies, are, all of them, are falling over themselves, knowing that they need help, knowing that child welfare does not make good parents. The state doesn't make good parents. They need the community. And if the faith community is willing to step up and take an active, committed role, we have seen the doors fly wide open. And so with 45-plus agencies that we're partnered with, from the governor down in many states, it has been an invitation to the church to do what the church is supposed to do.
I love that. Adrian, thank you for all that you are doing on behalf of orphans and foster kids, and thank you for joining us today.
It has been my pleasure. If I can say one last thing, the best part of this journey has been personal. Because all along the way, not only has God, you know, walked us through having kids through foster care and losing them, and then having the ability to end up adopting three through foster care and experiencing that personally, but he's using that and the thousands of testimonies that we get from other people who are experiencing the same kind of thing. They raise their hand to do what they can do, and God does more with it than they ever could ask or imagine. And when people get a hold of that vision, it changes the world.
So our listeners can learn more about Care Portal at their website, careportal.org. You can learn more about the Global Orphan Project at that website, goproject.org. And of course, you can learn more at the Justice for Orphans website, justicefororphansny.org.
Thank you for supporting this program by listening today, sharing what you've heard, and praying for orphans and children in need everywhere. More information is available at justicefororphansny.org. Visit and discover how you can make a difference in a child's life. And be sure to tune in to Orphans No More next Friday.